Welcome to Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. My name is Phil Strum. I want to thank everyone for all the interest in last week's debut episode with Rhea Ripley. Really appreciated it. Very excited today to have on this show one of the greatest tag team wrestlers of history, one of the most intelligent wrestling minds you're going to find anywhere, and also just one of the nicest people I've met in doing this. That would be Matt Hardy. From AEW, obviously you've seen him everywhere else, WWE, TNA, ROH, everywhere you could possibly think of over the course of his 30 years in pro wrestling. So very, very excited to have Matt Hardy joining us here today. Matt has a new podcast out called The Extreme Life of Matt Hardy. It's available wherever you get your podcasts, just like this one, partnered with his great co-host, John Alba. So without further ado, let's go to Under the Ring, episode number 2 with the wonderful Matt Hardy. Okay, we're here with one of the greatest tag team wrestlers of all time, one of the best minds in the wrestling business, Matt Hardy. Matt, welcome. Good to have you.
Thanks, Phil. Thank you for that very kind introduction as well. How are you today?
I'm great. Great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's a day of TV, so a lot of stuff going on, a lot of moving parts today, but I am well.
I really appreciate you doing this. Huge. For you, from a personal standpoint, what's it like to reform the Hardys with Jeff at this point in your career?
It's extremely special. And I feel like the deeper we get into our career, the more important it is, because we know we have a finite amount of time left to do this, especially together. And it was very important to both of us that we go out the same way that we came in as a tag team together. And I really feel like here at AEW, it gives us a great opportunity to really cement our legacy as one of the greatest tag teams of all time.
I was going to ask you too, from a professional standpoint, what it meant to you also. You know, you got a lot of new teams to kind of mix around with and wrestle, and a lot of people that were influenced by the Hardys.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's extremely exciting. I mean, when you have all these fresh matchups and fresh rivalries and fresh programs that you can have, I mean, that also breathes new life into Matt and Jeff Hardy as well. And it just makes it very exciting. And also there's so many great young teams, which are perfect teams for us to counteract, so to say, in the ring.
It was interesting to me looking back. Yours and Jeff's biography was published back in 2003. Here we are 19 years later, and you're documenting your career and your life in a completely different way, in audio format on the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy podcast, which is now launched. What's that experience been like for you with someone we both know, John Alba?
It's been a lot of fun. It's been really fun doing homework and getting notes from John and like jogging my memory, because there's so many things that happened that I've just forgotten. I feel like there's information overload in the locked room of my mind. There's so many things we've done, and we've been so blessed to have such longevity. And I think one of the coolest things for me is just like looking back at those memories and being reminded of some of the amazing things we did. And I look at it very fondly. It's so funny. I think about our autobiography in 2003, like we really hadn't lived at that point. I remember thinking like, well, we're young guys, but we're very popular. They want to produce this book because they know it was so good, because we're pretty popular right now. But like, we don't have amazing stories. Our story of making it to WWE was pretty cool and pretty inspirational. But like, now we have both lived such thorough lives. And I think you're going to need a Matt Hardy and a Jeff Hardy biography here in the future, because we have both really, really lived life to the fullest.
And it's such a good reflection of you, too, because you've always moved so well with technology over time that it's just funny to me that you had a book, you know, so early on, and now you've got this whole living document that you're kind of producing with John now, and just kind of did something that could really help a lot of wrestlers, you know, and kind of knowing what the ups and the downs are.
Yeah. And like you said, too, I feel like that's, once again, I try to be a survivalist in many ways in the industry, and you have to change and evolve as the industry does, as society does, as technology does. And that's one thing I've always tried to, you know, take a lot of pride of trying to keep my thumb on the pulse of what's happening in society and in technology. And it's very cool that this opportunity to do the podcast came about. And I've really been enjoying it thus far. And I think it's something that I can really do a great transition into, you know, following the end of my in-ring career, whenever that comes to an end.
It's interesting to see. You came from, you know, they got big in kind of the Attitude Era, in the, which is kind of romanticized now. But you see so many people from that era that are still working nowadays. And just also at the same time, the influence that you and your brother had on so many people. I mean, you have to hear that constantly, you know, both in the industry and just, you know, from fans.
Yeah, I mean, that is humbling. There's rarely a day that goes by now where someone doesn't come up to me and go, "Oh my God, you were my childhood." You know, I hear that constantly. And I remember when I first worked with Undertaker, you know, like right around 2000, you know, and I got to do a little bit of an extended program with him during this deal where I was like associated with Brock when he was working with Brock when I was doing Matt Hardy V1. And I remember talking to him about watching him growing up, even back in his Mean Mark house days. He's like, whoa, hold on now. Don't date me. Don't make me feel old. But I take that like as a compliment to the highest degree in many ways, especially considering I'm still able to, you know, perform on a somewhat high level now.
And now that you're the veteran, you know, how many old guys when you were younger told you and your brother, you know, you got to slow down, you got to stop taking the risk? And how many times now do you kind of avoid doing the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, we heard it all the time, you know, especially when we were doing indies, when we were doing our Omega stuff, and we worked with Italian Stallion and George South, and a lot of his guys were like old school wrestlers, you know, a lot of them were weekend warriors, but they're like, "Oh, brother, you guys got to stop doing all these flips and all these fernums, all these high spots, like, you're not going to be able to walk by the time you're 30 or 35. And we heard it very often. And we obviously still just followed our gut and we went with our instincts. And nowadays, I would never say that to anyone just because it's hypocritical and the style has obviously changed a lot. I just try, if anything, and someone asks me, I never interject myself into someone's business. If someone asks me what I thought about this match or what I thought about this spot or this transition, whatever, I'll always give my input. And, you know, I just try and do things that could help them work as smart as possible. You know, I'm never going to say don't shy away from doing your stuff, but try and put it in a position where it makes sense from a psychology standpoint and also as smart as possible.
Now, wrestling has its share of one-hit wonders. You've had about 30. This is your 30th year, I think, in pro wrestling at this point.
October will be 30. Yes.
Wow! Congratulations on that. First of all,
thank you.
What do you attribute your own personal longevity to? I know there's a lot of guys from your era that are still wrestling these days, but just, you know, what is Matt Hardy's story for, you know, how you've gotten to this point?
I'm very stubborn. I think I'm very stubborn. I am a bit of a survivalist in some ways. Like, you know, I know that you can't stay in one position or in one phase for too long. You have to continue to change. You have to continue to evolve to survive in this industry. And now more than ever, I try and do a really good job of taking care of myself. You know, that's one of the first things I have to do. Like, I get up every morning and it's cool. My wife is finally kind of accepted it now. Like, you know, the first thing I want to do is like get up and do cardio and get my blood pumping and work out, stretch, whatever it may be. And I just done that this morning. That is like vital to me staying young and also just in a capacity to be able to take bumps and wrestle or stay on the schedule that I'm on right now. Just a lot of it is just really being motivated because you love what you're doing. And I feel like the other thing is just being driven and stubborn to make sure you're going to do whatever it takes to put yourself in the best position and to be in the best shape possible so you can continue to do it.
You mentioned your own evolution, and, you know, it kind of leads me to thinking, you know, just what is your creative process? Some of the stuff you've come up with, from the broken mat to the big money mat, like all different points of your career, they're so different. And it's been a different version of yourself every time. So what is your process? How do you come up with this stuff? Do you bounce it off of other people? And just is there really a process, or is it just kind of what you feel in the moment?
I mean, I try and kind of go with what is current in wrestling. I also try and very much react to how fans react to me due to certain situations. Throughout wrestling, things change, you know, and you have to be able to hear the crowd and hear how they're reacting to you and then almost go along with it. You know, you have to be able to hear the people and follow them to a degree. You know, however they perceive you, I feel like you almost need to like portray yourself in that image to a degree. When I first started doing Broken Matt Hardy, I really wanted to try something drastic, something out of the ordinary that was going to be different and a throwback to, like, you know, some of the supernatural over the top characters of like the Papa Shango's and the Undertakers back in the 90s. And that was my goal, especially because I know, being an older performer, you know, my body has so much wear and tear on it. I was like, well, if I can do something that is more character driven, maybe that will help me survive better with all these guys that can do every move underneath the book that I could do when I was, you know, 20 or 25, whatever. And now that I'm in, you know, my 40s and my body's got some mileage on it, you know, let me try something different. So that's how that started. Even when I became Big Money Matt in AEW here, there was a point where, you know, we'd had the fall that happened at All Out, you know, the unfortunate thing where I'd got knocked out against Sammy Guevara, and so many people like had rejected the broken character because it was during a pandemic and it was an audience friendly character and we didn't have audiences, obviously. And then I was hurt and there was like a lot of feedback about that. And I said, I think the best course of direction is to turn heel. I said, because that's what I am reading from the people. And Tony Khan absolutely agreed with me. And so I'm glad that we did that. And I know people got annoyed and aggravated with Big Money Matt to a degree, but that was also my job. You know, I think people will look back at this Big Money Matt run when it's all said and done, especially once you hear from people like Private Party and Butcher and Blade, how much I did legitimately help and coach these guys and give them advice and give them tips. You know, I think people look back a lot more fondly on this Big Money Matt run than when it actually happened. But that's usually how things are in pro wrestling anyway. They never give you the credit you deserve until, you know, it's dead and gone, you know, until you move on to the next phase.
Yeah, I mean, you're just getting the Hardy Boys credit now, you know, 20 years later, right? I mean, people are rediscovering you guys for the first time in a lot of ways. You know, people from this generation, you know, from current generation of just kids that are kids now too. So you guys are entering a very loaded tag team scene, you know, as a tag team right now, both on the independent scene and in AEW. I think you worked Myers and Cardona and the SAT. I think it was last weekend. You've got Enzo and Cass coming up for Northeast Wrestling and John Morrison and Flip Gordon. You know, what do you make of the scene and anybody else that you have on, you know, on the horizon for matches you think would be good with the Hardys?
I mean, the AEW tag team division is loaded. And one thing that I really appreciate about AEW is that they really respect tag team wrestling and they're willing to treat it like a main event, like the main event program it can be. And I think a lot of that stems from the Young Bucks, you know, because they are two guys who, when forming AEW, really wanted to stress the importance of tag team wrestling. You know, and these are two guys that never want to like become single stars. They don't want to be the world champion. They want to be the greatest tag team they can possibly be. And I think that's cool. There's kind of a different mentality at WWE. You know, even if you were a great tag team and got over huge as a tag team, Vince ultimately would want to turn you into two single stars because that's where he feels all the money is. You know, and I do think there's money in tag team wrestling. I think when, you know, myself and my brother and Edge and Christian and the Dudleys were doing our thing, you know, in the Attitude Era and then the whole TLC era, I mean, we were a huge draw of the show. We were one of the reasons why people would tune in, and tag team wrestling can create that. And I'm very excited for the possibility of AEW to have a tag team division that is going to draw a big fan base coming up in the future.
You've wrestled in basically every company that's been available to you in your career. What has AEW been like in comparison to the others that you've worked in?
I mean, it is, AEW is on a higher platform than like a Ring of Honor or TNA. You know, especially with their television deal, which is lovely and it is fantastic to have. And here, just being able to have input and kind of like help control your own destiny is just an amazing feeling. Like my brother, when he came in yesterday or last week, and we were talking about the segment that I was doing with Andrade. He's like, oh, well, you know, do the writers have like how they want this to go? I was going, dude, there's no writers here. They don't have writers at AEW. That doesn't happen. Like literally, like there's a segment and this is kind of like an outline of kind of what they're thinking. And then you put the meat on the bone, you and your crew. And that's what we did. You know, the little segment that myself and Andrade did with Private Party. I was really happy with that, especially when Private Party did the whole thumbs deal and they went down. Just the fact that people were invested in the relationship between Matt Hardy and Private Party, which are two guys that I, you know, genuinely really do love and I really do like a whole lot. You know, the fact that they reacted so strongly to that was very rewarding to me. And it was the ultimate compliment. And then Jeff just showing up and kicking back off into the Hardy Boys and the emotion that we had and that genuine hug, there was so much reality in that as well. Like, and I think it is very telling of this point in our career, how much we really do appreciate having one another and how much we help one another. And I'm really excited for what is coming up and going forward. And AEW is just a place where you really do get a pretty open canvas and you get a fair opportunity to paint your own picture or play your own music. And that is one of the most amazing things about it.
That's amazing. It sounds like it's a real collaboration, you know, people coming together to get to the goal that they need to. Who are some of your favorite tag teams ever, other than obviously yourself and your brother, to watch as a fan?
Obviously, we're big fans of the Rockers. You know, the Rockers weren't always utilized as like a top tier tag team. We love the Road Warriors, and I think everyone was going to love the Road Warriors and LOD. Just they would come out and destroy people. It's what they did. I was also a big fan of the Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard. You know, the Brainbusters. They were amazing too, and you could really tell they were a great and fun team. And there were some other tag teams that were just kind of out of the blue, like the Powers of Pain. We enjoyed them. I enjoyed the stuff they did with the Road Warriors. And it's so funny because I know I would look back at some of these tag teams, which really wouldn't get over the same today, because now your work rate has to be higher. You have to be this great worker as opposed to being a big guy and a gimmick, you know. There were a lot of things I really enjoyed for the entertainment aspect back in the day. So those are the first few tag teams that really come to mind when I think about tag teams that we grew up watching and enjoying.
We're going to move on to something now. We're going to call the three count. It's going to be three kind of quick questions and your responses. So if any wrestler could have been the third member of the Hardys, who would it be and why?
Christian Cage. We would have put him in as Christian Hardy. He would have totally just fit with us.
What is your favorite wrestling theme song that you don't come out to?
Oh, man, the Macho Man, just because I was such a huge fan of the Macho Man and such a huge fan of his music and his whole act when he was coming up. I always dug his music. It was always very exciting to hear whenever we'd come out.
And finally, it's where I am right now, but is there anything that comes to mind when you think of Poughkeepsie, New York?
Yes, it is where I met my wife in 2011. That is my first memory of Poughkeepsie. Because of Poughkeepsie, I met my wife and I have all these beautiful children now, so I'm blessed.
Very good. Well, Matt, thank you so much for your time today on Under the Ring. Really appreciate having you on as a guest, and great to see you again. And thanks, good luck with everything you're doing.
Great to see you as well, my man. I'm glad you're doing good.
Thanks again, everyone, for joining us this week on Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. Once again, if you like what we're doing, go ahead and subscribe. And if you really like what we're doing, go ahead and leave us a nice review. I want to thank Matt Hardy and also his co-host John Alba for their help in setting up this week's episode. Join us again next week, will you? And it'll be just about WrestleMania time. And our guest will be one of the best wrestling experts and hosts I can think of, from Wrestling Observer Live and Figure Four Online and WrestlingObserver.com. It's Brian Alvarez. I kind of can't believe I'm going to be hosting a show where Brian Alvarez is the guest. That's pretty cool. So really looking forward to spending some time with Brian. And again, thanks to Matt Hardy and John Alba for their help this week. And for our entire team here, everyone, have a great week.